Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, it's a new quarter for us, you know, that number one. I mean, that's kind of how we look at things. We look at one game at a time. The most important thing for us right now is obviously the team that we're playing, which is a very difficult foe to play. A very, very talented group. And we don't want to get, you know, anything beyond that. I mean, so if you talk to me about, hey, how important is it for you to get this quarter kicked off, you better believe it. It's extremely important. And we play them twice within, a three-game period of time. It's a bit unusual situation. But we've been kind of up and down a little bit. The one thing you like about the group, they're tough. They don't back down from any challenge. They're a smart group of guys that work well together. They keep gaining that cohesion, you know. We've had a few guys in and out and that kind of thing, but we just think these guys will keep getting better.
We get ready for a big game this weekend against the Cowboys. And again, I hope all of our fans are out there going to show up. We need you. Our guys are working extremely hard, and I think they're excited about the challenge and the opportunity.
During the process, I was out there running around. You know, I couldn't catch anything, but, you know, I was running around making sure I stay in shape. I expect to pick right back up. We're like 1 point away, 3 points away, real close, and you just learn a lot by playing in the NFL that it can be three plays a game that cost you a loss. So I'm just still learning as it goes on.
You know, went through protocol last week and just kind of went by the rules and ended everything that was, you know, the process of that and stayed in tune with the game plan and just, you know, stayed in it. Continue to prepare this week and get back into it. And Coach Jackson, you know, came up to me and said, hey, you know, just get back into it and get comfortable. So, you know, my process right now is just the same thing I've been doing all week. You know, if that's what it is, then, you know, I'll be ready to go.
It takes a lot of commitment, hard work, good goals, good football character, good human character. We got those kind of guys. Yeah, there's elements certainly on the defense. You see the hustle, you see the aggressiveness. Some are, you know, seeing some schemes that we recognize, et cetera. You know, it's a really, really good staff, good bunch of guys. Understand, you know, the intensity they have. They're good at their jobs. That'll add to the test this week.
You know, it happened at 4-2, and you get these high expectations, which we all have this way are here, and I just want to make sure that, first of all, our players enjoy it, and second of all, I think our coaches need to enjoy wins, too. We've won a lot around here. So make sure we enjoy them, and areas that you need to improve, make sure you improve. It's Nebraska, traditionally, Rich. I remember the first time I coached against them, I think it was our first year here, and I could just see the white helmets in Nebraska. I grew up watching Coach Osborne, so Ohio State versus Nebraska, obviously the whole country will be peeking in on that one because they're two top 10 teams, and we have a slew of recruits coming in, and it's going to be a busy weekend.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed an extravaganza, but it's not just any extravaganza because today is Friday, and you know what that means. It is time for Football Friday! Right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, we got high school football coverage for you. We got college football coverage for you, and indeed, you better believe we've got the NFL for you as well. Thanks so much for being a part of the program at this early moment. If you're going to listen for 5 minutes, thank you. If you're going to listen for 2 hours, thank you. We appreciate you being by whenever you get an opportunity. And you know what? Don't be just a passive listener. Be an active listener if you feel up to it. If you don't have time to wait on hold, we get it. But seriously, if you're just sitting down and you like to listen to what we have to say, then again, thank you. That's awesome. We appreciate that. But be active if you are able, because nothing quite makes sports like the discussion and the debate and the fighting about it that goes along with it. So we want you to be a part of it at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065 in between now and the hour of 5 o'clock. High school football in the area and really all across the state and, of course, continuing up in Michigan tonight. Coming up at 3:35, Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan, will be with us to preview some of the matchups this weekend. Bill Connolly, who is a college football writer for SB Nation, is going to be joining us at 4:05 to talk about the big matchups, including, you just heard in the montage there put together by Mr. Cushlin, a little bit from Urban Meyer on the matchup with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And you heard before that a little bit from Jim Harbaugh as well, as the Wolverines look to stay unbeaten against a Maryland team that they should overwhelm at the Big House. And then at 4:35, we're going to talk a little NFL action. Scott Petrak, NFL beat writer, is going to join us. And you heard a little bit in the montage from Cleveland's Hugh Jackson and Corey Coleman, who returns to action after being out with an injury. Cody Kessler, who returns to the starting lineup, being selected over Josh McCown for this one for the Browns this week. And they've got the toughest test of all thus far this season. They got the Dallas Cowboys, who have been clicking on all cylinders behind Dak Prescott and former Buckeye Ezekiel Elliott. And at the very top of the montage, you heard Jim Caldwell talking about the matchup with Minnesota, and they do indeed have the Vikings in two of the next four calendar weeks, two in the next three games, only because the bye is after this week for the Lions. But you do have Minnesota, then the bye week, then Jacksonville, and then Minnesota again. Got to tell you, it looks a lot better, and we'll talk with Patrick about this. It looks a lot better for the matchup this time, or I should say at this time, with Minnesota than it did 2 or 3 weeks ago. We looked at the way Minnesota started out 5-0 and said, oh my God, this team is just inspired. Their defense is ridiculous. Sam Bradford is playing like he's born again. And, you know, missing Teddy Bridgewater, no big deal. Missing Adrian Peterson, no big deal. Looks like it's going to be real tough for the Lions to have them twice in three games. Well, maybe, maybe not. A lot of upheaval there as their offensive coordinator, North Turner, has hit the bricks and said, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. Didn't seem to have the same, wasn't on the same page with the rest of the coaching staff. So who knows? Maybe this will be an opportunity for the Lions to get back on the win column, in the win column. They are 4-4 on the young season thus far. And you heard Jim Caldwell do it the way all coaches do, I think. You know, it's just reasonable and logical. With the 16-game season, you break the season down like you break a game down, by quarters. And right now it's halftime of the season, and they're 4-4 are the Lions. Halftime. So the third quarter starts on Sunday against those Vikings, and they want to get that quarter off on the right foot. All right, so that's where we are on a Football Friday. We have a lot of guests coming up, but I actually want to start Football Friday with a couple of other discussion points. Last night in the NBA, the Cavaliers remained one of the only undefeated teams in the NBA, moving to 5-0, their best start to a season since 1976-1977. And that's a time that used to be a bellwether for that franchise. Why? Because of the miracle in Richfield, which no longer is much of a miracle after winning the championship last year, down 3-1. So they moved to 5-0 due to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And just for the sake of mentioning it, the Detroit Pistons are 3-2 to start the season. But the Cavaliers are one of only... No, they are now the only undefeated team, aren't they? I was looking at the standings yesterday, or maybe it was must have been Wednesday. It must have been Wednesday. There were a couple of other undefeated teams in the West, and I guess that is no longer the case. So the Cavs remain the only undefeated team in the NBA. Don't get excited. They're not going to threaten the Warriors 25 or... Jim, what did they start last year before they lost? Wasn't it like 22-0 and then like 25-1
or something? Yeah, it was like somewhere in that neighborhood. I can't remember the exact number because when it comes to them, I'm still thinking about how they got crushed by San Antonio, and last year they started 36-0 at home or something.
Yeah, right, right. That's just
but I think it
stuff.
Was. It was like 22 or 24, something in that neighborhood to start out the year undefeated.
I bring up where the locals are, the locals meaning the Cavaliers and the Pistons, the two teams we cover the most. Pistons and Cavaliers, if you're a Detroit fan, they come first. But the Cavs are the defending champion, so sorry, they come first. Anyway, the Cavaliers are 5-0 after last night getting a combined 79-19-19 from their big three. That's not a bad night's work. Kevin Love had 26 points and 8 boards. Kyrie Irving had 23 points, 4 boards, 6 assists, and LeBron James had where did LeBron's numbers go for last night? I seem to have misplaced them. LeBron had 30 points, and he had
7 rebounds, 12 assists.
12 assists. I was going to say 14. That was the night before he had, or the last game before that, right. Before that he had 14 assists. 12 assists and 7 boards. Thank you, Jimmy. So all of that combining for 79-19-19. And LeBron James on the season is not exactly tearing it up from a scoring standpoint because he's only averaging 22.4 points. That would be a career low if it expanded out over a season. I do not think it will. I do think he is making it his very intentional purpose at the start of games to defer to Kevin Love, not just to Kyrie Irving, but to Kevin Love, to get him involved early and often. And it's working because all three of those guys are having monster seasons. In fact, through 5 games, not one of them has failed to score at least 18 points in a game. All 3 of them have had 18 or more in all 5 games, which is huge. all three are averaging 20-plus points, which is huge, and I know that makes all of them very happy. But this is the interesting thing I wanted to bring up, looking at the NBA's best player, LeBron James, who reasserted that. And we will get to the other best players in the NBA battle last night as Kevin Durant, two-time reigning MVP, Steph Curry, and would-be, could-be, maybe wannabe MVP, Russell Westbrook, all got together for a little interesting little shootout last night out in Oakland. We'll talk about that in a moment. But LeBron James had last night, as I mentioned, the 30, the 7, and the 12. And on the season, he's averaging 22.4 points, 9 rebounds, and 10 assists, which led to a reporter asking him this question. Hey, LeBron, do you think you could ever average a triple-double for the entire season? Right now, he's one rebound away from averaging a triple-double through the first 5 games. Meanwhile, he hasn't had... Oh, no, he did have a triple-double in the season opener. Beg your pardon. He had a triple-double in the season opener. Russell Westbrook has had a pair of triple-doubles in his first 5 games and put up some monster numbers while doing it. He had a 50-point-plus triple-double, which is pretty monumental. But at any rate, he was asked, do you think you could ever do that? And what do you suppose LeBron James' response was? It was very LeBron-like. I can do whatever I put my mind to, but my mind ain't on it, which is really, really interesting. He said, yes, I could if I wanted to, but my mind isn't on that. And I'm wondering, is he right? Is that something he could do? It hasn't been done since the one time it's been done, and that was by the big O, Oscar Robertson, who averaged a triple-double for the entire season in, oh, God, I'm going to test myself here, am I not? Was it as early as 1961-62? Kushlin, take a look for me, would you?
Sure, yeah. I want to see if I'm right. That's always a fun trivia question right there. That you're averaging the triple-double.
I know. I want to say it was in the early 60s, but watch, it'll probably be like 67 or something. No, I think it was early. I think it was 61-62, somewhere in that neighborhood, that Oscar Robertson had the only NBA season in which somebody averaged a triple-double for an entire season. But it hadn't been done since then, and there have been a lot of wonderful all-around players who put up wonderful all-around numbers. You know, guys like Larry Bird, who had seasons of, you know, 28 and 8 and 8, or Magic Johnson. There have just been a lot of guys who have pushed up near triple-double stature.
It was 61-62 with the Cincinnati Royals. You
are
know them
you
now
serious?
The 60...
I pulled that yep. one out of thin air.
You deserve that one for that
yeah.
one.
Applaud me. Applaud me. Cheer for me. No, that's not enough. A little more. There we go. Yes. I feel very good about that. If you don't like that, then... Yeah.
30.8 on the points, 12.5 on the boards. The assists at 11.4 led the league. And, of course, that was for the Cincinnati wow. Royals. You know them now as the Sacramento Kings.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. 61-62, 30-plus points, 12-plus boards at 11-plus. So it wasn't even like he squeaked in with 10-10,
right.
You know, on the boards and assists. He had a couple to spare on the boards and almost two at 11.7, if I heard you right, on the assists. That's pretty amazing. Anyway. I just thought it would be a good talk radio question. If there was to be a player in the NBA who could average a triple-double for an entire season, who do you think would be that player? Is it more likely to be LeBron James, or is it more likely to be Mr. Double or Triple-Double on a pretty regular basis? And that, of course, would be Russell Westbrook. Westbrook has more triple-doubles on a more frequent basis, but LeBron's totals add up higher. Or oftentimes add up higher to make him, you know, in that neighborhood. You know, Westbrook will have the 30-point night and the 12 rebounds and the 12 assists, and he'll do that sort of thing, and he'll do it, you know, more frequently. But then he'll mix that in with, you know, the 25-point night and the 4 and the 3, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Which is why he doesn't average a triple-double. LeBron doesn't get as many of the actual triple-doubles. But over his career, he certainly had a ton, by the way. I'm just talking about more recently.
Yeah.
He's been passed up by Russell Westbrook in that category. But he has more consistent games of, you know, 25 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists, 24 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, 29 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, to the point where it's not triple-double time like Russell Westbrook does more often, but the numbers are also close to double figures in each of those categories, that suddenly you look at him and there he is. He's averaging now 22.4, 9, and 10. So who is more likely to average your triple-double for the regular season, for an entire season, if it is to happen? I just thought it was one of these interesting questions. And we'll take your calls on it, 866. State your case. Be an active participant in the show. Don't just listen. I'll give you my answer, but I don't want to steal your thunder. I've been doing this business long enough, almost 20 years of doing talk radio. I've been accused of stealing thunder when you don't tell me you're bringing thunder. So it's not my fault. I'm going to bring it to you unless you bring something to me first. You want to beat me to the punch, beat me. 866-240-1065, and we'll get you on the radio. I will offer a little bit, though, of just my mindset on this. For my money, Russell Westbrook needs to stuff that stat sheet more so than LeBron James does, and thus would make him more of a threat to do it. And the reason why is simple. Russell Westbrook doesn't have to share. Well, let me rephrase. Not doesn't have to share. That's not right. Doesn't have anybody to rely on. When I say he doesn't have to share, it makes it sound like he's greedy. And maybe he was. Maybe it's one of the reasons why Kevin Durant wanted to leave. We don't know. But what Russell Westbrook doesn't have that running mate to rely on now. He needs to be everything pretty much every night. He has to be the most aggressive guy on the court. He has to be the most aggressive guy going in to get boards, even from his point guard position. And that's what leads him to do the things that he does. And right now, his numbers are off the charts. Through five games, Russell Westbrook is averaging 34.2 points per game. That is the NBA's best. He is averaging 10 assists a game, which I don't know if that's first in assists. No, it's not. It's third. Tied with LeBron for third. James Harden is averaging 12.4. John Wall, 11.3 in the early going of this season as far as the league's leading assist makers. Oh, and you know what? I got to take that back, too, about points. Russell Westbrook has been passed in that, by the way. 36.3, DeMar DeRozan actually is first in points. Not that it matters. There's no scoring title being awarded in November. But Westbrook, 34.2, 10, and rebounds are at 9.6. Now, they don't round up when you're talking about triple-doubles, but I'm going to round up because I was taught that in math class. When you have a decimal, if it's 0.5 or higher, you round to the higher number. And there it is. So he's technically averaging a triple-double right now through five games. I feel as though because he's the first, second, and third option on his team, he has to do more. He has to be more aggressive. And I feel like he's going to get more opportunities to do triple-double type things than LeBron James, who doesn't have to do that, who isn't going to be playing nearly as many minutes because he has so many other running mates. He doesn't have to play 43, 44 minutes a game the way he might have when he was younger. He's 31 years old. He's going to get rest. And when he is on the court, he doesn't need to press things. If assists are going to come, they're going to come. They're not going to be forced. And a lot of times it's going to be totally dependent upon his teammates' shooting strokes. Because I don't know how many times you notice this, but over the course of LeBron James' career, and particularly since his, you know, in his return to the Cavaliers, a ton of his total assists come from finding open spot-up shooters. Not like he's making the perfect pass to the cutter who lays it in. You know what I mean? Kind of like you might see in a hockey assist.
Right.
A lot of times it's he just finds an open shooter and he hits them, and it's really up to that shooter as to whether they're on. If they're on, he gets a high assist total that night. If J.R. Smith is killing it, you know, like he gets on his binges, you know, LeBron's going to have a 12, 13, 14 assist a night because he knows that he's on, and he makes a point of hitting him in his open spots. But it's still up to the shooter to make it. I think Russell Westbrook is in a different position. Russell Westbrook does have to create off of his own, you know, drives and then drop it down, the little pocket pass to Cantor or to Adams or somebody for the dunk. He does find cutters, those kinds of things. There aren't a ton of great outside shooters now that Kevin Durant is gone, especially in the Oklahoma City team. So he's not going to get a ton of assists on shooters. He's going to get them going into the basket, on players going into the lane and toward the basket. And so because LeBron relies upon the shooting touch of his teammates for a ton of his assists from the outside, and because he's going to play less minutes, and because he doesn't feel the need to do so many things because he has so many great pieces and parts, he doesn't need to be a 10-rebound-a-night guy. He could be. For God's sake, he's 6'8 and 250 or 260. He could, as a power forward, he could lead the league in rebounding.
He's at nine rebounds a game through five.
Yeah, and he could lead. I mean, he could grab 12, 13 a game. He
sure.
Could, There's no doubt he could. But A, he does so many other things he doesn't want to, and B, he doesn't have to because of the presence of Kevin Love, who's one of the game's great rebounders, because of the presence of Tristan Thompson, who's one of the game's great bench player rebounders, you know, six-man rebounders, even when he's starting. You know, he doesn't have to go in there and do that. But I feel as though Russell Westbrook has to be a little bit of everywhere for that Oklahoma City team. So if anybody's going to stuff that stat sheet to the tune of, triple-double for an entire season, I kind of feel like it is Russell Westbrook.
No, and this is where I agree with you. It's just simply looking at the state of where the Thunder are, for example. And what I mean by that is after Russell Westbrook, the next two leading scorers after five games for the Thunder are Victor Oladipo at 16, Steven Adams at 10. Two of the guys who started when they got crushed by Golden State yesterday is Domantas Sabonis, 6.4 points a game, and Andre Roberson, 4.4. So there's just not the personnel there anymore.
And that means he's got to be everywhere, and he's got to score, and he's got to get second chance points, which means he crashes offensive boards.
Yep.
Which then jumps that total up as well. And again, he also knows that when you are a one man show, this is the kind of oddity of it all. And that's not the word I'm looking for. The irony maybe is that when you have to be a one man band as much as Russell Westbrook has to on the current iteration of the Thunder, you draw all of the attention that a one-man band does, and you get doubled. And sometimes if you go to the lane, you'll get somebody else slumping off their man and get tripled. And then you have to drop the ball down to those guys and give them easy buckets. So it's weird to say that when you're a one-man band, you have to rely on other people to score, but you kind of do, because when you draw the attention that a Westbrook does with his athleticism, quickness, ability to get people off the dribble and get into the lane, forcing other guys to leave their men to come and help on him, you're going to get a lot of easy assists that way. And you should. And it's a great thing, and he's a great player, and it's a good system for him, and maybe this is what he always wanted. Now he doesn't have to worry about Kevin Durant stealing any of his, pardon the pun, the Thunder, but stealing any of his. So I just feel as though, while LeBron James says, I could do it if I wanted to, maybe, but I feel like the most likely player to do it in the NBA right now is probably still Russell Westbrook. All right, so here's what we're going to do. There's a very interesting basketball conversation to be had there, and we can talk about that and more going forward. But as it is a football Friday, and we have you covered on the high school, college, and professional levels, we're going to take a time out for a sports center here. And on the other side of it, Bill Clark will join us to talk high school football playoff edition. Playoffs are underway tonight in the state of Ohio and Cush. They started last week up in Michigan, as we know. So we'll kind of get some thoughts from Bill Clark about some of the matchups this weekend, tonight, and tomorrow. Of course, the Central Catholic game will be tomorrow, so we'll get his thoughts on that. Then at 4:05, we talk college football with Bill Connolly, and NFL at 4:35 with Scott Petrak. So we are loaded for bear on the football side, but a really interesting basketball chat as well. Be a part of it at 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the extravaganza rolls on this football Friday afternoon right here on the ticket. Thanks for being a part of it. 866-240-1065 to join us. And we call it a football Friday because we like to cover all aspects of the game from the high school through the college and the professional ranks. And we're going to go in that order today, starting with high school football playoff talk now with our friend Bill Clark. Bill is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio. And obviously the voice of the Central Catholic Fighting Irish, who do not have a playoff game tonight, but fear not, it's just a one-night difference. Bill, how you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
I am fantastic. Always love this time of the year. It always brings back memories for me. It's nostalgic when you, there's just a feeling you get when you're preparing for a high school football game, when you're a player, and you know that all of your friends who didn't make the playoffs at other schools are on the basketball court right now. And
that's
you're
right.
Outside, and, you know, and it's cold, and it's, you know, especially in another couple of weeks, it's going to get colder and colder, and you're miserable, and then you think to yourself, they're all indoors, and they wish they were out here with us.
That's right. Absolutely correct.
It's a great feeling, so it's a great time of the year. And let's get breaking down some of the games and some of the matchups. We're going to hold off on Central, of course, just because they play tomorrow. So let's kind of work through some of the Friday games, if we could first, and then we'll talk more in depth about Central Catholic and Bay Village tomorrow night's game, which, of course, you will call. And let's start with the big one tonight in Division One in Region Two, and that is, of course, Whitmer taking on Medina. What do you know about Medina?
Not a whole lot. I mean, when you come over from, you know this, Bob, you come over from Northeast Ohio, the football's usually pretty good. Mm-hmm. Medina's had some really good years in the past, but right now, you know, Whitmer is playing very well. They've got an amazing pass and catch combination with Witcher and young Mr. Riley Keller doing a great job for them. And it's one of those deals where the skill position players are the ones I always look at when it comes to playoff time. I mean, you know, the big road graders up front are going to do what they do, and the defensive line hopefully will do what they do. But when the skill position players play like they are supposed to do, the better skill position players normally end up with a win. And I think looking at both of these two ball clubs, I mean, I would not hesitate saying that Whitmer's got more skill position players. They got the dual running back in Patterson and Malik Moore, and then, of course, we talked about Mr. Witcher already, and I tell you, Keller as a freshman has just been unbelievable. He's already getting offers from big schools around the country, and he hasn't even finished his freshman year yet. So bottom line, I think Whitmer should be able to move on to the second round of the playoffs.
This is a 4-5 seed matchup. Both teams are 8-2, and they're both very, very similar in that regard. And you know, you could almost file this one under the standard, hey, who's the home team here? It's an advantage for Whitmer to be the 4 and not the 5, and to play this one in their building.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I always think, you know, Central's been able to do that pretty much every year since Greg Dempsey has been there. This is the 16th out of 17 years they've been in the playoffs, and pretty much every year they've started at home. And you're right, it's a huge advantage. And I know Whitmer, that stadium is going to be packed tonight. It's going to be a beautiful night for high school football. The fact that we're in November and it feels like it's September. So the weather is not going to be a factor. And I think being at home in the first round of the playoffs, especially when the team you're playing has to drive as far as Medina is going to have to drive, it totally goofs up their routine. I mean, when you're playing in your league and you have to drive a half hour to your opponent, that's one thing. But when you got to leave school early, and then you got to find some place to stop and eat, and then you got to get to the stadium, then you got to get dressed. I mean, you're adding a couple hours to your game prep. And I really think playing that first round game at home is huge. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think Whitmer will win this by at least 14 points.
Great point. Great point all the way around. And the travel schedule is very, very difficult if you play on Friday night as opposed to Saturday and you've got a trip to make. You know, like tomorrow, for example, Bay going out to Central, you know, it's a hike, obviously, but it's a Saturday. It's not a school day, and you can plan things a little bit better. And we'll get to them in a bit. Let's stay with the Friday night action, though, and let's go to Division II and Region 6, and let's talk about Anthony Wayne, which is a 4 seed. So this is another 4-5 matchup against number 5, Cleveland Glenville. We know how dangerous they have been in the past. We know the number of athletes that they turn out to Ohio State and other Division I schools, and a lot of NFL players as well. But they're only a 5 seed this time around, taking on Anthony Wayne.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think Glenville, when they come in, they've had some problems off the field this year. They were supposedly going to be – they were going to have to forfeit a couple of games because they used an ineligible player during the season. Then, based on that, they dropped down to number 13, which looked really good for St. John's, because St. John's was able to move up a couple of spaces because of that. But Cleveland Glenville, for some reason, I don't know how the heck they do it, they got their appeal in front of the powers that be in the OHSAA and had that suspension reversed, or those forfeits reversed. So they bounced from double digits up into high into the playoffs, which didn't help St. John's. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to help Anthony Wayne. I just think that they've got Cleveland Glenville just has way too much power. They've got a lot of experience being in the playoffs. And Evan Brown, we're not really sure if he's going to play tonight for Anthony Wayne. So that's a huge loss if he can't answer the bell. So despite the fact that Anthony Wayne is home, I think this time travel's not going to make any difference. And I think Cleveland will get the win.
I don't really know what happened in that situation, but I think it might be fair to say that Ted Ginn Sr. carries a little bit of weight down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I think
carries
that's true.
Everywhere.
Yep.
All right, let's move into, let's stay in Division II, Region 6, and talk about the matchup between Springfield and Westlake. Now, this is a 2-7 matchup, and again, the travel being noted here, this is from Northeast Ohio. That's just outside of Cleveland is Westlake, for those who do not know, coming to Springfield, and that's a 7 seed traveling to a number 2.
Well, this is the first time Springfield has had a home game in their history. They've also finished off their first undefeated season in about 20 years. They got their first title in another 10 years. So this has been the year of the Blue Devils as far as the Northern Lakes League go. And I was talking to some guys today, some ex-coaches, and they said, look how good Springfield has played this year. And they lost Brian Kobach in, what, game three or game four? And just think how good this team could be if he was healthy. It just shows you what you have to do to be a successful high school football team. The next man up has to be big. And they obviously were able to do that. I mean, Brian Kobach still is the leading scorer in the in the NLL. He hadn't played in 7 weeks or four, five, 6 weeks. That's incredible. And he's the number two rusher in the conference based on what he did in those first couple of games. So you add what he could do if he was healthy, and Springfield really would have a chance to make a five-game run in this playoff. But tonight, I think they'll handle Westlake. I mean, they are going to be so fired up having that home game and coming off a championship in the league. Unless Westlake just plays out of their mind and a bunch of turnovers happen for Springfield, I think if they hold on to the football and A.J. Gachardo continues to do what he's been doing, I think Springfield will move on. And just one more note on A.J. Gachardo, talking about the fact that Brian Kobach got hurt, talking to Pat Gachardo, his grandfather, who is on the coach's show with me every Tuesday night. When that happened, he said, well, you know, before the accident to Kobach, A.J., all he was going to pretty much have to do as a sophomore is hand it off to Kobach and get out of the way. Well, when Kobach went down, all of a sudden there's a lot more pressure on that sophomore quarterback, and, man, he answered the bell. Over almost 2,300 yards passing, he's got 26 touchdowns. So the fact that Kobach got hurt ended up being a blessing in disguise because A.J. Gachardo really stepped up and matured, I think, a lot faster than a lot of people thought he would have to do as a sophomore.
Yeah, that's a great story. What a great story, and what a great way for him to, like you say, kind of grow up faster than he thought maybe he would have to, or maybe they even knew he was capable of. And to put up numbers like that is a phenomenal thing. We're talking to Bill Clark, doing a little preview of the high school matchups in Northwest Ohio tonight right here, and of course this weekend. We'll get to the Saturday games in a moment. Jim Cushlin is with us as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
And yeah, sticking with some of the Friday games, a division that I've been keeping my eye on is Division 6, as there's three big-time Northwest Ohio programs in here, and it starts with undefeated Patrick Henry. They held off Liberty Center for that league crown. Liberty Center, by the way, is the four seed in a different matchup. But Patrick Henry, they get Defiance North. They've been solid. They're undefeated. I got to like them at home to at least continue staying unbeaten for one more game.
Yeah, I would think that's true, Cush. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think Gibsonburg has had their problems this year. They did end up 8-2, but it's not a strong 8-2 that Gibsonburg normally rolls out. So, yeah, I would take the Patriots in this game to move on to week number 12.
And what about the other one with Liberty Center in there? They're taking on North Robinson, Colonel Crawford. I don't know much about them, but I do know this is a 4-5 matchup against a pair of 8-2 teams. And Liberty Center, one of their two losses, of course, was to Patrick Henry. So you only have one other loss outside of the team that they lost to in the league, but that's a solid team too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fact that Liberty Center's at home, I'm going to lean that way, and not by a lot. I mean, Colonel Crawford is a pretty good ball club, but Liberty Center, they played very tough. They ended up third in their league with two losses, but one of those losses was to Patrick Henry, who didn't lose to anybody. So if Colonel Crawford wins, I wouldn't be surprised, but I would lean toward the local team there and think Liberty Center, the Tigers, will move on.
We're talking high school football playoff edition this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket with Bill Clark. Bill, let's move to some Saturday games. And again, I'm going to kind of hold off on Central to make them our featured discussion here at the end of the conversation. So let's go to some of the other interesting matchups, including also Division III, Region 10, same place where we will find Central in Bay Village. And that's the other matchup between Bowling Green and Hunting Valley University School. That's a 4-5 matchup as well. We seem to have a lot of those on the docket.
Yeah, and Bowling Green has been playing really well. I mean, they had some problems in the league, obviously, but, with Springfield and Anthony Wayne in there, teams are going to have a problem. As a matter of fact, Bowling Green's two losses came to those two teams. So they had one other loss outside of their league, but this is the third straight year they've been in the playoffs, so they're not going to come in nervous. They haven't done great in the playoffs. I mean, they're 2-9 in their previous appearances, but They're playing at home tonight. I don't know a lot about the Huntington Valley University School, with except the exception, as you mentioned, they're number 7 seed, and they are 7-3, so the leagues are identical. But I just think right now Bowling Green is playing really good football. The fact that they've got this one at home, I think, means an awful lot. So I'd pick them to stick around for another week.
In Division 5, Region 18, also Saturday games now. Let's talk about Coach Mike at Swanton. Swanton has West Salem Northwestern in yet another 4-5 matchup.
Yeah, they're ranked number 8 in the state, they being the Bulldogs. And this is the second straight year they've been in the playoffs. They've got a sub-500 record in the playoffs. They're 1-2, but I think after tonight they'll be 2-2. I think Northwestern, you know, they've got some decent skill positions, but the fact is that Swanton, even though they have to go on the road, I think Mike Vickers is a seasoned coach, that he's going to have his kids in the right frame of mind. Even though they've got to travel, it's not that big of a deal, because everybody knows, you know, if you've been there before, and these kids at Swanton have been, as we said, this is the second time they've been to the playoffs in 2 years. So they know a little bit of what to expect. So even though they're on the road, I'm going to take the Bulldogs in this one.
The top-seeded team in that region and division and region is Norway. And they're the one seed, and they'll be hosting Genoa. Any shot there for an 8-1?
Yeah, I don't think I love Paul Patterson, I beg your pardon, in his comments. They've got some very good skill position players. They run the football. They don't pass a whole lot. But the fact is they have put an offense on the field that has pretty much outscored their points, their opponents by double. So they can put points on the board. It's one of those deals where they're going to try to grind it down your throat. And if Norway can't stop them, it's going to be a little bit of a problem for them. So I think it's going to be tough for Genoa. I hate to pick against the local team. As I said, I really think Coach Patterson is a great coach, but I think Norway might have just a little bit too much, unless the running game for the Comets can really take off.
The second seed in that region is Eastwood, and they get the home game against Marion Pleasant. That's a 2-7.
Yeah, I think Eastwood is just flying high. I mean, the Eagles, they've just done everything right this year. Jerry Rutherford has been around for a long time. He's got a great quarterback. He's got a running back that does really well as well. So I would think the Eagles can make plans to play for another week.
And then one small school story here before we get to Central, and that is the Division 7, Region 26 matchup tomorrow between Macomb and Lakeside Danbury. Danbury is an 8 seed and maybe an early exit.
Well, the good news, bad news for Danbury is, the good news is they got in the playoffs. The bad news is they have to play Macomb. And though the kids can go out with saying they got to the playoffs, the Lakers, I mean, the Danbury ball club, yeah. But I don't think anybody's going to stop Macomb for a while. So, yeah, I would think the Panthers will climb into the 12th week with not a lot of problems.
You might say the very same thing, Bill Clark, as we wrap it up here, talking high school sports, high school football, I should say, and playoff matchups this weekend. You could say the same thing about the Bay Rockets from Bay Village. It's another suburban Cleveland school from northeast Ohio, making the long trip to Central Catholic. The good news is we made the playoffs. The bad news is we got to play a team that makes its living in the state championship game on an almost annual basis in those Fighting Irish. A little preview there.
It was interesting what Coach Dempsey said in the paper today about the difference between being confident and being arrogant. And he takes a lot of pride in making sure that his kids are just confident and keep their feet on the ground. Nobody is looking at Central Catholic, oh, God, they'll just throw their helmets on the field and we're just going to lose. It's not that way. I mean, these kids take a lot of pride. When they beat St. Francis to win the Irish Night, nobody wanted to give that back. When they won the track championship, these seniors wanted to go out making sure that they also won a track championship. But on the other side of the coin, Bob, you got to look at the fact that the Bay defense, they've only allowed 22 points over their last 6 games, and they've got 4 straight shutouts. Now, that doesn't say anything about the opponents they played, because I have no idea about the – I mean, I know the teams they played, but I don't know how good those teams are. But when you put up those kinds of numbers, obviously you've got a defense that holds people down. I think tomorrow night we will have a very quick game, and I say that because both of these teams just run the football. I mean, Bay has over 3,300 yards rushing as a team, and, of course, Central has Mike Warren, who has 2,000 on his own. So both of the quarterbacks, I mean, Torin Campbell's thrown 93 passes this year, and Connor Shell, the sophomore quarterback for Bay, has only thrown 77 passes. So if you can make this team one-dimensional, being if Central can make Bay one-dimensional and that dimension is in the air, Central has a much better chance of winning this game. But this could be who controls the line of scrimmage, because there's some big hogs on that front wall for Bay. And, of course, Central's got a great front line, too, opening up holes all year for Mike Warren Jr. So I think it could. This game could be decided in the trenches. And, of course, every playoff game, turnovers are going to be huge. If you put the ball on the carpet a couple times, it really makes it tough to win. Central's plus, let's see, they're plus 12 in the turnover column. So that's been good for them. They've forced more turnovers than they have committed. And then I really think one final point, Mike, or I'm sorry, Bob, is with last week with Lima Senior. Mm-hmm. If Central would have just rolled into Lima Senior and rolled out with a 30 or 40 point win, yeah, that would have been great. They would have won the track title and yada, yada, yada. But the fact is they were really tested last week. They were down 28-14 to a very good Lima Senior team. And for only the fourth time this year, Mike Warren had to play into the fourth quarter. But they did that. They came back. They got an exciting 35-34 win. And talking with Coach Dempsey about that very fact this week, he said, yeah, that was huge. I mean, to have yourself tested the week before you go into the playoffs, when every team you play is good, that just gives these kids a lot more confidence. Because there's going to be a time in these playoffs, and hopefully it's a five-game playoff for the Fighting Irish, but there's going to be a time where you are behind, because the team you play is going to put points on the board. They're not going to go in with five shutouts. So how you respond coming back if you are down is going to be huge. And the fact that the Irish came back against a good team last week to win the track championship and get that win is huge for their psyche going in for tomorrow night's game.
That's a great point. You get tested like that, you need to know how you're going to respond to those tests. That is a very good point. But in this game, this 1-8, it's a 1-8. And there is the possibility, I'm not trying to predict anything, but there's a possibility it could get out of hand. You know, a lot of top seed teams blow out a lot of 8-seed teams in the first round of the playoffs. If that's the case, how does Greg Dempsey handle that? He certainly has never been one to run it up on anybody, and he doesn't want to get his guys hurt, so he's quick to turn to his second and third team guys. But you also have to prepare for next week. So if things were to get out of hand, what is his philosophy as far as getting my guys all the work they need to make sure that we are in, you know, we are on the right page, we have all of the right chemistry, and we got enough work this week to make us ready for next week?
Well, I think it has happened several times this year, Bob. You follow the Irish with the scores as well.
Sure.
The fact is when they get into blowout mode, the Mike Warrens and the Torin Campbells and the Chase Bowens are usually watching from the sidelines pretty much for the entire second half. Now, I'm not sure that would be the case tonight. He might, or tomorrow night, Greg might let them play a little bit into the third quarter just to kind of keep them fresh.
That's
but you
what
certainly
I'm talking
don't
about.
Want to have.
Exactly, because playoffs are different than regular season. You
know, absolutely.
He's always going to yank those guys, but in the playoffs, you got to be ready.
You still have that bugaboo that if Mike Warren twists an ankle, blows out a knee, playing in a game that's out of hand, that is just going to ruin your season. So it's a fine line that Coach Dempsey and his staff will have to run. You know, when they had a couple of the blowouts early in the season, and we talked about this before, I call those parent games because everybody gets to play and the parents stay off the coaches. This, when you get to the playoffs, the parent games, they're not worried about that anymore. And the parents aren't worried about that anymore. They want their kids to do as well as possible and have the team go as far as possible. Most parents do. And with that being said, they're going to sit back and let the coaches do what they need. But if it's 25 points or 30 points and you got a running clock in the third quarter, I would be very surprised to see Mike Warren and Torin Campbell and some of the starters in that third quarter.
That's the way it'll look. Now, that game tomorrow that we'll hear you call is not going to be right here on 106.5 The Ticket because it will conflict with Ohio State football. So to listen to Central Catholic and Bay tomorrow in that Division III Region 10 first-round game, it'll be over on 100.7. So we will look forward to that call tomorrow and look forward to talking with you again next week as we get ready for round two of the playoffs, which I have a strong hunch will involve still a number of great area teams. Sound good?
Well, from your mouth to God's ear.
Bill, thanks for the breakdown. It's always a pleasure. We appreciate your expertise.
All right, thanks, Bob. Have a great weekend.
You got it. You do the same thing. There you go. So tomorrow's, just again, a programming note for any Fighting Irish fans or just fans of high school football, I should say. Tomorrow's game, if you want to hear it on the radio, it'll be over on our sister station, 100.7. It will not be here on 106.5, The Ticket, because of Ohio State and Nebraska tomorrow night.
So
that's...
Now, by the way, with that, I also want to make a secondary programming note, too. Because of that, you know, most would think, okay, if the Central's playing on Saturday, I guess we'll have the normal Friday night scoreboard show. No, for one more week, this one, tonight at 10 right here on the ticket, we will get you all the scores of all the Friday action around the area and around the state right here on 106.5. So one more scoreboard show, and that one is tonight at 10 here on the ticket.
Good note. Thank you very much, Jim. And by the way, since we're talking about all these championships teams are playing for, state championships, let's elevate it to the national championship level and remind you once again, let's get another qualifier for the national championship flyaway contest. Chance for you to win a trip for two to Tampa, Florida with round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay, two upper-level tickets to the game, rental car with parking, and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. It's a $5,000 prize package. If you win that grand prize, well, I'm sorry, if you don't win that grand prize, you are still eligible for the runner-up prize, which is a trip for two to Michigan, Ohio State at the Horseshoe November 26th with limo service. You could also win a prize package to Yuengling, from Yuengling. So here's what you got to do. Be the fifth caller right now. Fifth caller to 866-240-1065, and we will qualify you for that contest. If you don't qualify on the air, you can do so online at 1065theticket.com. Good luck from Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Good luck to you. We are going to talk, speaking of college football, we're going to talk about the playoff rankings, where they are now, and preview this weekend's big games coming up in just a minute or two, right after the Sports Center. Bill Conley from SB Nation, college football writer extraordinaire. He'll join us right here on The Ticket.
Well, it's a new quarter for us, you know, that number one. I mean, that's kind of how we look at things. We look at one game at a time. The most important thing for us right now is obviously the team that we're playing, which is a very difficult foe to play, a very, very talented group. And we don't want to get, you know, anything beyond that. I mean, so if you talk to me about, hey, how important is it for you to get this quarter kicked off, you better believe it. It's extremely important. And we play them twice within, a three-game period of time. It's a bit unusual situation. But we've been kind of up and down a little bit. The one thing you like about the group, they're tough. They don't back down from any challenge. They are a smart group of guys that work well together. They keep gaining that cohesion, you know. We've had a few guys in and out and that kind of thing, but we just think these guys will keep getting better.
We get ready for a big game this weekend against the Cowboys. And again, I hope all of our fans are out there going to show up. We need you. Our guys are working extremely hard, and I think they're excited about the challenge and the opportunity.
During the process, I was out there running around. You know, I couldn't catch anything, but, you know, I was running around making sure I stay in shape. I expect to pick right back up. We're like 1 point away, 3 points away, real close, and you just learn a lot by playing in the NFL that it can be three plays a game that cost you a loss. So I'm just still learning as it goes on.
You know, went through protocol last week and just kind of went by the rules and ended everything that was, you know, the process of that, and stayed in tune with the game plan and just, you know, stayed in it, continued to prepare this week and get back into it. And Coach Jackson, you know, came up to me and said, hey, you know, just get back into it and get comfortable. So, you know, my process right now is just the same thing I've been doing all week. You know, if that's what it is, then, you know, I'll be ready to go.
It takes a lot of commitment, hard work, good goals, good football character, good human character. We got those kind of guys. Yeah, there's elements certainly on the defense. You see the hustle, you see the aggressiveness. Some are, you know, seeing some schemes that we recognize, et cetera. You know, it's a really, really good staff, good bunch of guys. Understand, you know, the intensity they have. They're good at their jobs. That'll add to the test this week.
You know, it happened at 4-2, and get these high expectations, which we all have this way here, and I just want to make sure that, first of all, our players enjoy it, and second of all, I think our coaches need to enjoy wins too. We play a lot around here. So make sure we enjoy them, and areas that you need to improve, make sure we improve. It's Nebraska tradition. I remember the first time I coached against them, I think it was our first year here, and I could just see the white helmets in Nebraska. I grew up watching Coach Osborne, so Ohio State versus Nebraska, obviously the whole country will be peeking in on that one because they're two top 10 teams, and we have a slew of recruits coming in, and it's going to be a busy weekend.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed, and Football Friday continues right here in hour number two on the Extravaganza. A lot of good stuff there. Most of that was NFL, and we will talk with Scott Petrak about some of the matchups coming up this week, including Lions and Vikings. Browns taking on one of the beasts of the NFC this season, the Dallas Cowboys. But it is time for college football talk now. Some very big games involving top 10 teams. The highlight, of course, the showdown between number one Alabama and SEC nemesis and rival LSU. now under the guidance of Ed Orgeron. We're going to talk about that as we welcome Bill Connolly back to our program. Bill is a college football writer with SBNation.com, and he joins us now right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Apologies for the swallow there. How you doing, Bill? Good to have you back.
Good to be here.
All right. Bill, let's start with that number one matchup that we just mentioned. Obviously, we want to talk about Ohio State. We want to talk about their top 10 showdown against Nebraska. Obviously, they're trying to overcome some malaise, if you will, in the last couple of weeks, including a loss against Penn State. But the number one game involves the number one team. And, of course, we're talking about Alabama. Nick Saban has owned Les Miles. There's no doubt that's one of the reasons why Les Miles is watching this game from his television set this weekend. But LSU has really, really surged since Les Miles was given his walking papers. And Ed Orgeron has this team playing great football. They are number 13 in the country. It's at Baton Rouge. And according to a couple of stories I read, quoting some past quarterbacks for Alabama, Jalen Hurts is in for an enormous surprise and just a real, real wake-up call when he walks into that stadium. When you walk into Baton Rouge, there is just something about playing there that you can't really describe until you experience it. How much of a factor will it be for that freshman quarterback guiding the number one team in the country?
Well, I would say it depends on his supporting cast as much as anything. You know, Lane Kiffin has become very good at, basically establishing a way to get the quarterback comfortable. So usually that means, you know, a lot of quick little horizontal passes, kind of stretch the defense from side to side and establish a little bit of a rhythm for the quarterback. And I would assume we're going to see something of the same thing here. If you just try to hand the ball off twice, gain 3 yards, and his first pass attempt is on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, something like that, that's when the crowd is going to really have an impact. So if you're avoiding passing downs, you're able to just figure out how to, even if you're not scoring points early, if you're just figuring out how to get him into a little bit of a rhythm and, you know, remind him that it's still football, I think that's probably the plan, and I assume that's what we'll see.
What's the difference between this LSU team under Ed Orgeron and under Les Miles? I mean, obviously we know he's trying to open up the offense more, something that Miles was very resistant to over the last few years, as a lot of the, you know, critics really set in on him, saying his offense is outdated and he's got to keep up, et cetera. But is it just that, or is there a different attitude, a different mindset under what can only be considered one of the great interim coaches in college football history, considering what he did at USC and what he's doing here?
Right. I mean, we heard a lot about them opening up the offense, so to speak, but it's not like they're coming out and throwing 40 passes a game now, or, you know, going 5 wide a whole bunch. It's still a run, a very, very run-heavy offense, especially, and I mean, of course it is. That makes sense when you've got not only Leonard Fournette, who's actually healthy. That was part of the problem for Les Miles early in the year. They didn't really have a healthy Leonard Fournette until the Ole Miss game. But if he's healthy now, they've got Darius Geist, they've got the ability to run the ball. The issue for them in this game, though, I mean, however you're going to do it, you're opening up the offense, so to speak, or not, you're going to have to figure out how to kind of peel Alabama's defenders out of the box. Last year they knew they were willing to give up one or two bombs, but they were going to just crowd the box and make life really hard for Fournette, and it worked. This year you kind of figure maybe they're also, I said Jalen Hurts is going to come out passing side to side. Maybe LSU tries the same thing to try to get defenders a little bit out of the box a little bit. I don't know if it's going to work, but you figure that's what they might try.
Does LSU have to win this? Does Orgeron have to win this game in order to get that job permanently? And do you think if he does win this game, they will automatically give him that job?
Well, I mean, that'd be kind of interesting. I wouldn't do that. I mean, you could certainly run now the risk of, you know, congratulations, you beat Alabama, you got the job, and now you lose twice. But I would say that I don't know if it's a necessity that he has to win. If he does, his odds go up dramatically. But if he wins out after this, beats Florida, beats Texas A&M, I would say that still puts his odds at pretty decent. The bar is really, really high here, and he knew that when he took the challenge on. And so far, he's got LSU playing like they were supposed to be playing all year, and that's a very good thing. But now they have to play even better to beat Alabama. So I don't think the bar is so high that he has to go undefeated and beat Bama, but a good showing would go a long way.
One more thought on Bama and this matchup before we get to some other games that we'd like to talk to you about, as we talk to Bill Connolly of SBNation.com, college football writer extraordinaire. How big is the gap between Bama and the field? In the rankings, it's Michigan 2. In the CFP, the playoff rankings, it's Clemson 2, then Michigan. I don't think anybody would argue that either one of them are better than Bama. The question is really, how big is the gap between them and second place?
Well, I mean, Michigan has done nothing wrong this year. You know, they played one close game and they won it. They kind of let Michigan State hang around a little bit and catch up late in the game, but that game was in control relatively quickly. They have looked the part of a top one or two team so far. It's just that I think part of the thing here is that it's a trust issue. We know Alabama's good. We've only seen eight games, and that's fine because they look like Alabama's supposed to look. Michigan, we don't really trust. Last year, they collapsed towards the end of the year. They set a really high bar and then couldn't continue to meet it. So I think that's where we're at right now. Those two teams are potentially a step or two ahead of everybody else, but we don't know until we see it that Michigan will keep it up.
Now, you say that with a lot of confidence, not even really considering Clemson, who, again, got the nod from, and not that it matters, obviously, now at this stage of the rankings, but the committee said, no, we don't think there is just those two guys. We put Clemson up on top of Michigan there, even though the polls had it otherwise.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Clemson. Clemson's, offensive line gives me a lot of pause. Their defense is awesome. Deshaun Watson is awesome, but they've really, they've been stretched a couple of times more than I would feel comfortable with. I think the committee sees, the committee right now is trying to balance between quote unquote strength of record and actual strength. And honestly, looking at the rankings, looking at A&M number 4, I think they went more towards strength of record, which kind of frustrates me a little bit. And I think Michigan paid for that a little. I think Washington paid for that a lot, even though really their resume isn't that different than Texas A&M's, and they haven't lost. I didn't really like those moves necessarily, but yeah, I think with Clemson's record, I mean, they've beaten Florida State. Auburn, the win over Auburn now looks a lot better than it did, as it happened. Obviously, they beat Louisville. They've got a nice resume. I just don't quite trust them in terms of execution quite as much.
I think that's fair to say, and I'm kind of in the same boat with you on that. We'll come back to the college football rankings in a bit, but right now, we could actually segue into them right now. Jim Cushman's got a question involving the team that was undefeated, leading in the Pac-12, and just got bypassed by that one-loss Texas A&M team. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, and Bill, this is the one, I would say, surprise to a lot of people when this week's first edition of the playoff rankings came out, that undefeated Washington of the Pac-12 at number 5 with A&M at 4. One of the big reasons, it seems, is their schedule, and I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, their out-of-conference schedule was a joke, but since they have beaten two ranked teams, one on the road, Stanford, the Utah was the road game. They put 70 in Oregon on top of them. So, I mean, this is a solid team, but they obviously have to keep doing what they're doing. This is the late-night game on Saturday at Cal, and obviously we know they need to win to keep pace. How surprised are you that it was Texas A&M over Washington, though, in this first rankings?
You could kind of see the sentiment growing with some of the people who are, in the ESPN stats and info team. They had that strength of record thing, and they had A&M number 4. So you kind of could see this coming a little bit, but I was still frustrated by it because I don't think Washington has done anything to prove they aren't a top 4 team. Let's put it that way. And, part of the reason, I think schedule has played a role in that, but basically you're punishing them, A, for something their, an associate athletic director did 3 years ago. And even then, when they scheduled Rutgers, Rutgers was at least a 7 or 8 win team, not, one of the worst in the FBS. And then B, you're also punishing them for the fact that Stanford and Oregon aren't as good this year. And that's not the way this is supposed to work. No, Stanford and Oregon aren't as good, but Washington beat them 114-27. They absolutely destroyed both of those teams. Then they went to Utah and played a really a tricky, tough, weird Utah team in Salt Lake City and survived. So I thought that would be enough. I was hoping that would be enough. Now, if they continue to win, it's probably fine. A&M's probably not going to win the West. There are scenarios where they could, but it's probably not going to happen. And so Washington will get the quote-unquote conference title bump if they continue to win. They're probably going to be just fine if they finish 13-0. But that was a little glimpse into the decision-making process, and I didn't really like it very much.
Bill Connelly covers college football for SB Nation. Bill, this is kind of a segue into the Ohio State-Nebraska game that we want to ask about, but it's also kind of staying on topic with the rankings. And you don't have to say Ohio State because I just set that up. But who is the best one-loss team right now? Looking at the top 10 teams, A&M, Ohio State, Louisville, Nebraska, which may be decided tomorrow, and then Florida is down there at number 11. Who's the best one-loss team in the country?
I in terms of the pure upside that we've seen, and since we still have a third of the season to go, I think we have to lean on that a little bit. I think Louisville has by far the most upside, the most the highest ceiling, so to speak, and that's because of their quarterback, obviously. But we also saw with Virginia the other day, they kind of have a low floor still too. They're not quite consistent enough to make you trust them completely. So that's probably if you put Louisville, I think. definitely the top two of the one-loss teams. And it kind of depends on what Ohio State shows me down the stretch. First month of the year, they might have been the best team in the country. But since then, they've struggled a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it, which is the reason for that question, because I would have said Ohio State 2 a while ago, but I don't think that's the case now. Mm-hmm. Now, they could really strengthen their case with a win over Nebraska, a very, very good Nebraska team that just lost in Camp Randall for their first loss of the season. The pollsters didn't think it was that bad of a loss. They kept them in the top 10. They only dropped 2-3 spots, depending on which poll it is. So Ohio State, which has looked very shaky in a win, well, it's a 21-point win, but they didn't dominate Indiana on October 8th. And then they, of course, went to OT against Wisconsin, lost to Penn State, and a very shaky 24-20 win over Northwestern now. Is that just kind of mid-season blues? Is it young kids still trying to find their way? There's a lot of first-year starters on this team. Or is it an indication that maybe this team isn't as good as previous Buckeye teams have been as they get set to take on Nebraska at the Horseshoe?
Well, I think what happens, especially with a young team, they're kind of hard to scout early on, and then you start to figure things out. You start to figure out what Ohio State wants to do, and I think what we're seeing now is pretty disciplined, solid teams, like a Northwestern, for instance, who is absolutely better in the last two or three weeks than they were before. You see them, you see Wisconsin, just and Penn State, of course, being able to frustrate them a little bit and make them force them away from their strengths a little better. And honestly, Nebraska might be able to do the same thing. Now, Ohio State should absolutely be able to run the ball against Nebraska, but if there's a situation, if they fall behind schedule on any given drive, Nebraska's really disciplined in pass defense. They prevent big plays very well. They get after the quarterback, especially in obvious pass situations. And, you know, they have very good experienced ball hockey and safeties. So as long as Ohio State stays on schedule, and they still do that better than most teams, could even dream of doing, as long as they're on schedule, everything's probably fine. I don't see Nebraska scoring very much. Their offense, their first and 10 offense is just not very good. And I don't think they'll be able to take advantages of the glitches that Ohio State's shown on that side of the ball. But if Ohio State is in situations where they have to pass, things could go bad very quickly.
JT Barrett in the first couple of weeks might have been considered a Heisman candidate until, of course, you know, Lamar Jackson went all video game on everybody, and it's him now. But JT Barrett has kind of fallen off, I think, as a potential Heisman candidate. And I want to go back to the first game I asked you about, which is Alabama and LSU, and you mentioned Fournette. You know, last year, Alabama really put a dent in his Heisman hopes. In fact, his entire reputation, I think, has taken a hit between injuries and then that performance against Bama and the whole stuff last year. Should he even bother playing, or should he sit it out so he doesn't get injured? He's going to be a top three draft pick, blah, blah, blah. Is this something that is there anything he can do against Bama to kind of vault himself back to into the stature that he once had? And maybe even if a, you know, if Lamar Jackson suffers another loss or something happens and there is an open, you know, Heisman slot, that he could fill that?
You know, missing three games probably hurt the Heisman candidacy quite a bit. And then also probably Darius Geis coming in and doing almost as well as him probably didn't help him. But he was amazing against Ole Miss. If you do that, you know, even if you don't do 16 carries for 284 yards against Alabama, as long as if you're putting up 150, 170, you have a couple big runs and you beat Alabama, that's obviously, I mean, number one, his stature is going to be just fine. I figure his stature is fine regardless, but that will especially remind everybody how good he really is. But no, I mean, if he puts up 200 yards and they beat Alabama and now they're looking like they might win the SEC, and then he puts up, you know, Arkansas's run defense is really bad, he puts up 250 against Arkansas, starts putting up video game numbers, then I think he could at least get back to New York. But it is hard when, number one, you're playing only 11 games, or I guess 12 with an SEC title game, but then you've also missed three. It's hard to put up those numbers that you probably need to put up.
Bill, last question before we jet, and we really appreciate your time and your analysis. It's always outstanding when you join us. And I'm kind of circling back once again now to another issue when we talked about the best one-loss team. Staying away from that, if there's a dark horse, as you look at those rankings now and you project them out 4 weeks from now, after a month of football in November, if there's a dark horse that's not in that top eight or so where you see Ohio State and Louisville, et cetera, is there a dark horse outside that you could see making a serious run at being one of the top four when it's all said and done?
I would say the only two outside of that top, the 0-1 loss teams, I'd say Wisconsin, Auburn, and LSU have the schedule remaining to do serious damage. I guess technically Nebraska does too. If they beat Ohio State and then beat Michigan in the Big Ten title game, you could throw them in that mix too. I don't trust that they'll do that though. But you look at the two lost teams there. Wisconsin, if they finish 10-2 with pretty good wins, they beat Michigan and other teams have fallen by the wayside. Technically, they could insert themselves there. And then Auburn and LSU, obviously, both of them get to play Alabama, and that's when you get a chance at the number one team, especially if you then turn around and win the SEC after that. That'll get you into the top six, and it just kind of depends on other people whether they can get to the top four.
I think that's fair enough. Really great stuff, Bill. We appreciate the analysis. Enjoy the games this weekend. By the way, I didn't even ask you who you're picking. Is Bama going to go into Baton Rouge and win again?
I would love to see LSU win this game. I think it would make these last few weeks very, very interesting, but I never pick against Alabama. I'm almost always right to not do so, so I'm going to stick with Alabama.
Agreed. And then one more. What's your pick at the Horseshoe, Nebraska and Ohio State? Is Ohio State right the ship?
Yeah, I think, even if they're not completely righted, so to speak, I think they have enough to beat Nebraska, yeah.
I like it. Bill Connolly from SB Nation, college football writer. Bill, thanks for the time this afternoon. Great stuff. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a timeout there because we have got to continue Football Friday right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We did high school. We talked college. And now it's NFL time. The Vikings and the Lions, the Cowboys and the Browns. Not really a marquee matchup there with the second one, but a big-time matchup for the Lions and the Vikings. We're going to talk NFL and pick some games with Scott Petrak, NFL beat writer. By the way, congratulations to Scott Bachman of White House. He was the next qualifier in our NCAA championship game football flyaway. NFL talk with Petrak coming up next right here.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And Football Friday continues here on the Extravaganza, high school to college, and now time for the professional ranks. And, boy, it's been a few weeks. I think baseball got in our way the last couple of weeks, and I was out on the one before that. But I think it's been a full 3 weeks since we have had Scott Petrak for his kind of normal weekly Friday visit right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So, Scotty, good to have you back, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. Before we get into football and we start talking about, the big games this weekend and some not so big games this weekend, you were also covering and writing about the World Series there, so you were kind of doing dual duty. How hard is it to go from the pinnacle, the World Championship Series, with the champion, American League champion Indians, to now being back on the 0-8 Browns beat?
Yeah, it's rough. I'll tell you, the rough part is the late nights and the early Browns practices, but I know what you're saying. You know, that's what all my relatives and buddies are like. How do you go from that to that? And I guess you just get an appreciation for winning in playoffs, you know, which I've not, unfortunately, seen around here.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's got to be hard. I know. I mean, just the enthusiasm and the excitement of Progressive Field for all those games that you were watching during the playoffs. And then, you know, you look at the I wasn't there, but I was looking at the TV last week, and I guess a lot of people just were dressed in Halloween orange, either that or those seats were empty because it was bad the way it looked on TV for the Browns last week.
Yeah, there were thousands of empty seats, and, you know, the problem is they got a lot of home games late in the year, and the weather's going to get worse, and, you know, the performance probably isn't going to get much better. So, you know, this is just one of those years where you got to grin and bear it and hope it pays off down the road.
The team with the longest winning streak in the National Football League is about to play the team with the longest losing streak. And I'm talking about the 6 straight winning Cowboys and the 8 straight losing Cleveland Browns. And apparently, youth shall be served. Cody Kessler, the rookie, gets the starting nod again. And Corey Coleman, the rookie wide receiver, is going to be finally back in action. Is there anything that a Browns fan can hang on, hang their hopes on, that this is going to be a competitive football game on Sunday with the Cowboys?
Yeah, you know what, Bob? I actually think it might be. And I think there's a couple reasons. One, you know, Dallas, they're due to play a clunker. You know, teams don't usually play well week after week after week. But from the Browns' perspective, I think having Cody Kessler back is nice. Not that he was going to play any better than Josh McCown, but I think they're pretty much even nowadays. And he's a rookie, and Coach Hugh Jackson said today that he's going to be the guy the rest of the year, and they want a full evaluation. So maybe he feels a little emboldened. And then having Corey Coleman back, that's a definite boost. You know, they need a guy opposite Terrell Pryor to open things up and to give him another playmaker, and Corey Coleman does that. And the Cowboys are missing a couple of their starting secondary guys. So I think the Browns will have the chance to score some points. I don't think they can keep up with Dallas, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
Scott Petrak joining us, talking NFL football. The first one, the Browns and the Cowboys. And I just mentioned Cody Kessler. Jim Christian's got a follow-up there.
And, you know, when I'm thinking about Cody Kessler and the announcement today, Scott, that he is going to be the starter, and as you mentioned, the starter for the rest of the way, I can't help but think that obviously they want to see what they got here, but I can't help but think, give me, from your standpoint, a percentage possibility that this team decides, you know what, Cody Kessler's our guy beyond this year.
Yeah, that's a good question. I go 50-50, maybe. Hugh Jackson liked him when they drafted him. You know, remember the whole trust me, this is the right guy. They took him in the third round. I don't know if you take a guy in the third round thinking he can only be a backup. So in Hugh's mind, I think he always thought Cody Kessler might be a starter. He's played better than I expected. He's probably played better than the Browns expected. So that gives you some hope. And then the other part of that is you don't know what the draft's going to be like with who's going to be available, you know, at number one or number two, wherever they wind up picking. So I think all those things factor into it. So I go 50-50. I'm not sold right now that he's the guy. I'd still lean toward taking somebody at the top of the draft, but I don't think it's set in stone by any means.
Is there somebody at the top of the draft that's set in stone, by the way? And I know the college football season isn't over yet, but who would they be? Would it be a quarterback, and who would that be?
Yeah, well, it's definitely not set in stone. There's no Andrew Luck or Jameis Winston or Peyton Manning from back in the day. I think there's a handful of guys that are in that discussion, including a couple of quarterbacks. The kid from Notre Dame, I know he hasn't been great lately, Deshaun Kizer.
Yeah, he's a
Toledo
kid. But I think
he has the makeup. You're looking for the size, the arm strength, that kind of thing. I think Deshaun Watson needs a deeper dive to see if he's physically right, but a lot of people like him. And then there's always going to be some off-the-radar guys. You know, at this time last year, I did not have Carson Wentz on my radar, and he winds up being the second pick in the draft. You could see a guy like North Carolina's Mitch Trubisky, who went to Mentor High. He looks like a pro quarterback, and you hear his name get out there a little bit more.
Scott Petrak joining us, talking about
Number 9.
Week 9, and it's weird because of all the buys. You know, everybody's on a different week. But, okay, week 9 in the NFL. I want to shift gears and go to the Detroit Lions. Very, very interesting game coming up against the formerly undefeated and now hitting the skids. They're changeover in their coaching staff. The Vikings were 5-0 and the toast of the town, minus Teddy Bridgewater, minus Adrian Peterson, plus Sam Bradford, and a great defense. And the Lions have just been the picture of inconsistency. They are now 4-4, as inconsistency would dictate. They had lost 3 in a row. They won 3 in a row, and now they lost again last week in a tough one to Houston. So what do you see there at Minnesota?
Yeah, that's tough. Minnesota's a team that I've had a hard time getting a grasp on all year because I didn't think they were good enough to be 5-0, and then you kind of bought in, and now they're going the opposite direction, which, you know, it's going to be tough to tell what the shakeup on the coaching staff this week does. You know, North Turner is out, and he's an established coordinator. You know, he's been there for more than a year, so he had his offense in place. And now you go to Pat Shurmur, you know, guy who's near dear to me, but he wants to run more of a West Coast than Norv's vertical passing. I think it's a good fit for Sam Bradford, but I don't know if he can have it change over in a week. You know, so I think this is a tough game. The majority of me says Minnesota's going to bounce back because they're a better team than, you know, losing whatever, 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4. But I don't feel real confident in that pick.
Scott Petrak joining us, talking a little NFL and picking some games and some of the other more interesting games. The Steelers-Ravens used to be a battle for the top of the division, and it may still be because the Bengals are kind of mediocre right now. And the Ravens, I don't think, are even at mediocre. This game doesn't have the luster, especially if Roethlisberger doesn't play or isn't 100%. But this is a big-time rivalry game between two perennial division leaders. It's at Baltimore this time, 4-3 Pittsburgh and 3-4 Baltimore. What do you see?
Yeah, no, you're right, Bob. It has none of the juice that it used to have. I think this is Baltimore's last stand to say, okay, we're going to compete in this division. You know, because if they win, then you pretty much got a free-for-all with those three teams, not including the Browns, fight for that what likely will be one playoff spot when it's usually two or three. So I do think Baltimore makes the stand, even though, you know, you see Big Ben coming back, you see Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. I just think this is one of those games that Baltimore is not supposed to win, but I think they pull it out.
I don't see a ton of other actual big-time matchups on this calendar this week, with the exception of the battle on top of the AFC West.
Yeah.
How about those Oakland Raiders. And they'll be hosting this one in the O. Denver and Oakland, 6-2, both of them. You know, a lot of people thought the Raiders might be on the come, and I kind of did too. I didn't think they'd be this good. I didn't think Derek Carr would be this seasoned, and I didn't think Amari Cooper would have catapulted himself from, you know, maybe in the lower teens to suddenly into the top 10 as far as maybe even higher in the NFL's best receivers right now.
Yeah, you know, I always liked Derek Carr coming out. I liked him. I thought the Browns should have taken him. He was my favorite over Johnny and even Teddy. But he's come along. He's come a long way in a hurry. And where they surprised me, Bob, is Jack Del Rio. You know, he'd flamed out in Jacksonville. He wasn't a favorite of mine, but he's kind of playing really well. And he's shown that they can, he's got a mental toughness. They go on the road, they go on the East Coast, which they always struggle with. And I think they won 3 or 4 times on the East Coast playing at 1 o'clock. They overcame 23 penalties last week. So they've been impressive. However, I think this is one of those games where Denver says, you know what? We are still the class of this division. And a lot of people coming at us. Oakland, Kansas City's pretty good. San Diego's been better than I expected. But I think Denver makes a statement in this game, although I think it's going to be a real good game. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I am too. In Denver, I mean, if you're just looking at straight numbers, Denver would seem to have an advantage in this regard. They're both 6-2, but Denver's been winning much more comfortably. They're averaging 24-plus points a game. They're giving up 16, whereas, you know, the Raiders are about as close as it can be. They're scoring one point more per game than they're giving up at 26-25. So Denver is probably, because of that defense, probably still the favorite here. But boy, the Raiders really are opening up a lot of eyes, and I think they are going to be a playoff team after I didn't pick them to be one. At the beginning of the season. There's not, again, not a lot of other real top marquee matchups in my mind, Scott, so I'm going to ask you about some individual storylines if I can. Eagles and Giants is interesting. And I mean, these guys, the reason it's not a top marquee matchup is only because Dallas is 2 games in front in the division. But they are both 4-3. Odell Beckham is a story, obviously, and Carson Wentz and what the Eagles are doing is a story. Maybe not against one another, but they're fighting for second place behind the Cowboys now. And again, this one is at the Meadowlands. How do you see it?
Yeah, I like the Giants. I think the Eagles have a little bit of turmoil going on. You know, they lost the game they should have won probably last Sunday night in Dallas. You know, they win in and they wound up losing in overtime.
Sure.
I think that's a setback, and I think it's tough to always bounce back from a loss like that. They had one of their players get arrested, and then they weren't going to cut him, and then they wound up cutting him. So there's some stuff going on there. I think the coach, Doug Peterson's starting to take a little grief in his rookie season. So I like the Giants, although, you know, it's always one of those games in that division where it comes down to who turns it over and who doesn't. Eli tends to turn it over, but I've always had a soft spot for Eli, and I think he's better right now than Carson Wentz is, so give me Eli.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and you know they're struggling, I think, to get out of their own way too. This whole Odell thing that we saw for the first month of the season with just the, you know, the shenanigans and you know Ben basically McAdoo saying basically he's got to tone it down, and no, I didn't really mean he has to tone it down. There's just a lot of stuff there that gets in the way. And while I don't mind Eli, I don't have as soft a spot as you do. I think I agree with you on this one. I think Eli and the Giants get a home win here. The other, what is a marquee matchup, even if the teams aren't necessarily, because the Colts are not very good, but the Andrew Luck versus Aaron Rodgers matchup, what do you make of Rodgers' early season struggles and kind of a belief that maybe going back to the second part of last season that there's something that's a little off with Rodgers? And then obviously Andrew Luck is just in that same situation he was in before he got hurt. He's trying to avoid being hurt because he's still taking a ton of sacks. These are two of the best quarterbacks in the game. They're
right.
Not necessarily playing at their peak performance level right now. How do you see that one?
No, you're right about that, Bob, and that's why these teams have lost more games than they normally do, because they're not getting the play from the quarterback spot that they're used to. With Aaron Rodgers, I think part of it is the lack of a consistent running game and the inability of his receivers to do what he needs them to do. And I don't know if that's because Jordy Nelson still isn't right following knee surgery, and Randall Cobb had some issues, but they're not playing to the level that Aaron Rodgers is used to. And I think that's affected Aaron, where his mechanics are off a little bit. And he was never a perfect, you know, kind of statue in the pocket where he'd always had the same release every time. But I think his footwork got a little sloppy for whatever reason. His guys weren't coming open. He felt nervous. You know, it can just be the smallest thing that creates the difference between magnificent and then just slightly above ordinary for him. And I think he's trying to work out of that. He was better the last couple of weeks. You know, I just think Green Bay in this matchup is better overall. Indy, you know, Indy had struggles. I don't think they could stop anybody on defense. We saw that. I think it was a Houston game where they were up and they only needed one stop and they couldn't get it. They wound up losing a game there. So, you know, even in that matchup, I like Andrew Luck a lot, but give me Aaron Rodgers.
Very well stated on both fronts there. And then the other one I'd ask you about, since we're talking about marquee quarterbacks, I don't even really care about the game between the Panthers and the Rams, but I'm interested in your thoughts of the Cam Newton story at the beginning of the week. He, you know, at the end of the, in the post-game press conference, I'm sick of this. Enough is enough. I don't feel safe out there anymore. I'm going to talk to the commissioner about this. He's making it sound as though he has just been being treated unfairly by the league, the referee, all of the referees and officials in this league. And Dean Blandino said this week, look, we went and reviewed everything. There's two calls we missed, two roughing calls against Cam Newton, including the one this past week where he was hit low in the back of the legs that we missed. He's played eight games. There's two calls we've missed. You know, he's overstating this. This is essentially what I think Blandino was saying. What did you see and what do you think of that situation?
Yeah, you know what? First of all, I don't love for my quarterback to say that. I think he can feel that all he wants, and he can use that as motivation. Mm-hmm. If he wants, I don't love for that to be the first thing he says after the game and that to be his focus. I just think it sends a bad message, and you don't see a lot of quarterbacks doing that. And I don't think it was necessarily saying that to get the calls. You know, like you saw Tom Brady or Peyton Manning come out strong like that. I think it was because, hey, I think if I get this call, I can help my team.
Yeah,
I didn't get that
pressure
from Cam. It was more, you know, not selfish, but he was worried about himself. You know, and that's fine, and I get understand worrying about your needs. But I just didn't love the way that he went about it. Having said that, they blew a call, and it was an obvious call, and it feels like, I know what you said, Dean Blandino said, but it feels like throughout his career, there have been multiple times like that, where you see Cam take a hit and you wonder where the flag is. We saw it in the opener against Denver, and I think the one Sunday was kind of egregious, and you know, you watch these games and the officials, the referees looking right at the quarterback. So for him to miss that, I get why Cam's upset. I wish he would have handled it a little better.
Yeah, I do too, and I get it too. There are two follow-ups to that. One, and I talked about this on Monday's show, you know, you're going to see guys getting hit lower a lot more because anytime you go anywhere up above the chest, you're getting flagged. It feels like what the league is doing is saying you can't hit above the chest, you can't hit below the knees, so you've got a strike zone. You know, essentially a baseball strike zone. You know, top of the knees to the bottom of the shoulder pads, the only place you're allowed to hit guys anymore. If you're not allowed to hit guys high, you better believe guys are going to be going low. And if they're going low, sometimes you're going to get guys in the knees.
Well, yeah, you're 100% right. I think the only reason, or I think why it makes sense for Cam to feel unjust is because they instituted a whole rule because Tom Brady got hit in the knees once. You know, and that's why the rule exists. So now that it's in place, how do you miss it with Cam?
Right.
I think that's where his beef is.
Yeah, and I get that. My comment is more just about the league as a whole. If you ask the players themselves, and they've all said this too, even knowing what they know about concussions, they have said, if I have to take a head shot or a knee shot, I want the head shot. Because even with the concussion protocols, I can be back on the field in a week or 2 weeks. But if you take my knees out, I'm out of season. And maybe my career is in jeopardy because if I don't come back, you know, if the surgery doesn't take well and I'm not as fast as I was, maybe I'm not the player I was and I lose millions. They'd rather take headshots than knee shots. So this is something, again, the league has kind of brought on itself with this emphasis on protecting the head. Not that, you know, you can overstate the importance of that, but they really, I think, have overstated it to the point where players are not going to be taking chances. And if you can't take a big guy like Cam Newton down by hitting him in the torso, Ben Roethlisberger isn't going to have a lot of guys being able to hit him, you know, in his upper body and drop him. And if you're not allowed to hit him high, then they're going to go down after his legs. And that's another guy, by the way, Marcus Gilbert, the tackle for the Steelers, said, look, Ben's been hit the same way Cam has been hit for 12 years in this league. They're big, 6'5", 250-pound guys who shrug off big hits. It's going to happen. Ben doesn't cry. Cam needs to shut up.
Yeah, and I know, you're right. Your overall
that's
point
Gilbert.
Is
that's
taken,
Gilbert,
Bob, and it's correct. It's tough to hit guys in that small an area. You know, when you're talking to quarterbacks, a lot of time the D linemen happen to be on the ground because he got blocked. He's just trying to scramble to get a guy down some way. But the reason you can't hit guys in the head is because it's a longer term effect. I get the players are thinking about now and they're thinking about the career and how much you're going to get paid. But that's why they need trainers and medical staff to say, hey, the brain is important. So 20 years from now, you're not dealing with
right.
CTE or all these other things that come from concussions. where you might not be, you might be limping, but you're still walking and still thinking. So there has to be a short-term and a long-term way to think about it. But you're right. It's a tough league for the defense nowadays. There's no doubt that.
Last thing, Scotty, there's been two ties in the league this season already. You don't see that very often. Do you, are you okay with the overtime rules the way they are? Are you okay with two ties?
I am, Bob. I know the outrage there is, but I don't think the college rules work in the NFL. I don't like it for an NFL game. And unless you want to go back to the sudden death where a field goal wins it, everybody uproared about that. I think this is the best way, and you just got to live with a tie every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm in an uproar over that, too. And I don't like the ties either. There's got to be a better solution out there. And unfortunately, since the music's playing, we can't think of it right now. But we will. I'll put my brain to work on this and do a little brainstorming, and we'll see if we can come up with something better and see if you like it next week. Scotty Petrak, covering the NFL and the Cleveland Browns out there in Cleveland. We appreciate your time, sir. Thanks much.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. That's it. Jim Cushlin is playing music at me, and that means I got to shut up now because Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Enjoy the games, high school, college, and professional this weekend. Monday afternoon quarterback starts at 3 o'clock on Monday. We'll see you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.